Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. To say that the IT industry has been going through a bit of a rough patch in the last couple of years is like saying nothing at all. Layoff announcements have become so common that they often don't make the news headlines anymore. And you could say that after years of overinvesting with somewhat questionable business models and strategies, the bubble for the IT industry had to burst sooner or later. And as true as that may be, there's a bigger question of what happens next. How do you manage the downsizing without limiting the potential of the company? Or as my guest has so eloquently put it, how do you cut costs without killing the future? It's the classic problem of planning for short-term versus long-term. But there's a better way of dealing with this, I think. And it starts with changing versus to and. Planning for the short term and the long term. Because they are not opposing forces. You need to take care of daily business and ensure you are future ready. You need to plan and execute. You get the idea. It's a delicate balance, but you can't have one without the other. And changing the versus to and helps a great deal. My guest today is Rana Esgard, the co-CEO of Beetroot. No, not the root vegetable, but the company that builds dedicated teams and software solutions that create an impact for businesses and most of all, the world. Rana is passionate about connecting strategies to ways of working through results-driven execution. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Rana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
It's great to have you, and no guest escapes the first question. I'm very curious. When you were little, who did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, not a who, maybe a what. The earliest kind of this is what I thought I wanted to be when I grew up that I can remember was an astronaut. But I was really, really small. And so small that I actually thought that each country was on a separate planet. And so in order to be able to travel, you had to be an astronaut.
Okay. Right. It's making it really difficult for me because I always set myself a challenge of trying to connect what or who the person wanted to be when they grew up with what they do now. And
I'm trying
to connect to where you are now. And I'm struggling. How can you help me out here? Do you see the connection?
Well, maybe there's some sort of curiosity in there, like exploring and learning new things and testing out different type of roles, different industries, different conversations. Could be that.
Possibly.
I'm helping you out there.
Yeah, you're definitely. Thank you. You're definitely getting me out of this hole that I dug for myself. Which is I can see the experimentation element of trying different things and seeing, and I guess that kind of speaks to the personality because I think that's kind of the thing that I always see is who or what we wanted to be when we were little is already starting to show kind of the traits of the personality that we've got, the character that we've got, and I think that's the thing that I don't want to say predetermines, but drives, dictates who and what we want to do. There's a lot of patterns that I've been seeing around that. Usually the follow-up questions are, if you wanted to be an astronaut, what on earth went wrong? What happened?
Well, I quite quickly realized that maybe the world did not look as I thought. And then came a series of more like a classical jobs in terms of life, what I thought I wanted to be in school, journalist, lawyer. I love about the humaniora area, but at the same time, I was very into technology and gadgets and computers and Again, it's not a straight path for me. It's a
you know
exploring.
What? It rarely is that straight path, and I think that's one of the things. I was talking to somebody the other day. I think it was about teenagers and their kids, and indeed it was my friend who's just about to go to university. I think in about a year or 2 years' time, and trying to think what he wants to do. We're just saying that we tend to project. We do. Our parents did based on our experiences in the past. We project that onto the future and what the future generations should do. For example, our kids. But that's a little bit backwards. Because the world, especially the world that we live in now, in 2 years' time is going to be completely different. The rate of change was much slower 40 years ago. Now it's breakneck speed and it's going to get even faster. So actually finding the balance of trying to figure out who you want, who you are, what you want to do, what you're interested in, and most of all, accepting the fact that you're not going to be working until you're 65. You're going to be more likely work until about 80, 85, if you're lucky, yeah. Because we're going to be living longer. Therefore, we need to work longer because the retirement programs of today are not going to be able to support that. And the other element of experimentation and a non-linear path, I think, is one that if we embrace, will help solve a lot of, not problems, but anxiety related to progression.
Mm. Yeah, I can also share, like, I can out my teenage daughter, who we had a dinner conversation the other day, and she was saying that I haven't heard of or been exposed to, or I cannot imagine any job that I would like to do forever and ever, like when I finish study. Like, what would that be? Nothing sounds fun. And I said, you know what? You don't have to worry, because the jobs that are going to exist when it's time for you to work, they do not exist yet. You don't even know about them. So you don't have to concern yourself with figuring out now what you want to do 5-10 years. It's impossible.
That's true. A guest on this podcast a couple of years ago has gifted me a book afterwards called The 100-Year Life, which talks about how life's going to be different. A lot of kind of theoretical, but based on prognosis of how long we're going to be living and how our lives will need to change, or the lives of our kids will have to change based on that. And first of all, is that they're going to be working longer. Second of all, they will have multiple careers. They probably won't go into their first proper career until they're in their early 30s. Women are more likely to potentially, after having children, completely redesigning, reschooling themselves by going back to university. And that's going to be quite common for people going back to university, doing, you know, medical degrees, law degrees, engineering degrees at 50 to go into another career, their second career, right? It's fascinating, fascinating read. I highly recommend that for anyone, really, especially if you've got kids and teenagers, and giving them that to read to understand the world that they're going to be facing. Anyway, we're talking about looking forwards and into the future, and we'll come back to that from a business perspective. But what I wanted to talk and potentially start off with is our conversation is looking back a little bit in the last few years as a company. How has it been for you? Because obviously, the IT industry, as we said, has been going through a very, very difficult time. If you could give us a little bit of a background of what's been going for you, then we'll take the conversation into what's been going afterwards and what the future holds for you.
Sure. So I would say that the last couple of years has been difficult, challenging, and also inspiring at the same time. So there is no way to talk about the past years without being open about the situation that the majority of our team has been in, because we have a Swedish-Ukrainian company. We're now more diverse in terms of the delivery locations, but the fact is that big majority of our team are going through a really hard time. It's horrible. Simple as that. And on top of that, there are normal business challenges that the whole market is facing. And that in combination has been a bit of a struggle. But I choose to add inspiring there, because this period has also shown that, well, I'm personally truly impressed and inspired by, like, the resilience, the creativity that the team has shown. So it's a bit of both. It's eye-opening in some ways, also a learning experience.
Obviously, you did mention the elephant in the room of how your company is set up and what countries you're based in. Obviously, the situation in Ukraine quite naturally, quite unexpectedly, has had a massive impact on you, which is unique in many ways. And I'm sure you've been talking about that topic so many times with people that they're curious about that. Then there's only so much that you can talk with or you can do about this. But as a whole, it does have an impact on the business. On top of that, you have the normal business challenges and kind of shifting the mindsets of how you work and how you approach certain aspects. And what was the journey for you in terms of if you focus on what's been going on with the IT industry as a whole, what have you experienced in that aspect, in that realm? Everybody, basically, as I said in the introduction, everybody seems to be firing people, laying people go, to the point that actually it's not news anymore. It should never have been news in the first place, to be honest. But it's just like, yeah, it's so common that we don't even pay attention anymore. What has been going on for you in that respect?
Well, I think we notice a lot of this ourselves. Of course, we're not immune. And the big shift that I see is that the whole scene has shifted from basically free money and growth at any cost and market share at any cost to the fact that companies have to show some sanity in their operations and some sustainability in their growth. So you need to be you need to have healthy finances. You need to be somewhat profitable to survive. And kind of the tap of free and more has been closed quite abruptly. And that, of course, has a trickle effect because you have VC world that's shrinking, you have concentration around certain domains, and then you have a lot of companies that are suddenly facing themselves with, we cannot only get more money or borrow money or get new money to grow. We actually have to have a sustainable revenue and operations and a business model that is holding up. And that is a big shift, I think, for many companies.
I don't know why, but as you were describing that, a light went on in my head that it's actually, in a way, I might be completely wrong, but I know I'm drawing this connection to the situation of around 2007, 2008 crisis, where banks were basically giving loans and mortgages left, right, and center to anyone and everyone, no matter whether they were able to repay that. And kind of the investment in the IT industry over the past decade or so has been, in a way, as you put it, kind of the tap has been closed. It has been a tap. It's like, yeah, do that. So it's actually, and you will know better than I did, as if the investment tap is open, but it's far more stringent. You have to, you know, justify the growth, the potential, rather than just coming, sort of getting a blank check.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what has been happening. And the ones that will, I mean, it's a game of surviving now. Like who can ride out, because we don't know how long this period will be. There are some signs that things are turning in certain fields, but you don't know how long the situation will continue. So it's going to be a longevity game. Like if you manage to kind of survive and come out on the other side, you're probably going to be a stronger and more resilient company. But if you can't, you're doing something else, or you have to rethink your business model, or it's going to be a radical change. Because I think that the patience with, like, okay, we need more money before we can prove that we actually have something solid in place, that patience is smaller now. So you don't have the same time of leeway and kind of time that you did before to prove yourself.
I'm certain, simply because of, you know, the amount of people I speak to and the workshops that I do, that challenge of what you just described, you have to have patience, you have to do things to keep your company afloat to survive, but also not necessarily hoping, but being ready for when the tide turns. It will turn sooner or later. It probably is never going to go back to what it used to be, but it's going to pick up sooner or later. That's where a lot of people in your position, in organizations, get stuck, because they don't know how to manage the day-to-day here and now, but also how to prepare for the year, 2 years down the line. And as I said in the introduction, because they are perceiving it as one or the other, binary, right? And I get that, because that's how our human brains work. We like to solve problems and we position that as a problem. But then if you position that as a both things that you need to do, and each of them has an upside and a downside, you just kind of need to figure out the balance between them. Now, this is the point where you can tell me, Lek, that is absolutely complete nonsense. It doesn't work like that in real life. Does it? Does it not? What's your take?
I like the way you put it in the versus to and. And I don't necessarily agree with that it's like super binary and therefore it's hard to understand. I think it's actually, logically, it's not so hard to come to that conclusion. And like, okay, we have to do both. We have to think about the future. We have to do this and that. That, like, accepting that, at least for me, that, or seeing the need for that, that's not the challenging part. The hard part is more kind of the choices and the execution that go with this. And I can elaborate on that. So by choices, I mean both in terms of where and how to optimize, like here and now, ongoing operations and so on. And for the end part, like when thinking about how to look at the future, what are the bets that we want to make? Like where to focus, how to read the markets and trends, how to connect that to your long-term vision. And finding time to do both of this at the same time. It's super easy to, let's say you plan a strategy workshop where, you know, you're trying to crowdsource ideas and discuss what you want to do for the future. It takes approximately 10 minutes and then we're back into firefighting. And like, oh, but we have to solve this first and we have to do this now and tomorrow we have this review and next month. So it's super, you have to like really remind yourself that, okay, yes, there are a bunch of things that we need to do here and now, but we really need to allow ourselves to carve out a little bit of time to think about what do we want in the future. Where do we want to focus? How do we come out of this period? Where do we want to be better than we are today? And where do we want to do less of? So those conversations are very important to make time for. essentially, and like stay there, stay on the future for a couple of sessions at least, so you have some rough idea. And then the execution part of all of this is equally important. So it's timing, communication, following through, both for the here and now and the kind of future capabilities that you want to build.
I know this is going, it might be potentially a very difficult question to answer because it's probably one of those things that you might actually be doing without thinking about it too much. But how do you find that balance? Because in most cases, it tends to be firefighting. Whatever the new thing comes in, it tends to go onto the top of the priority list rather than the bottom of the priority list. And that's why that balance is shifted. How do you, because you say you try and carve out time. Is there a specific approach, practice that you keep yourself accountable to and therefore your team? How do you approach that?
This is one of the, I would say, one of the activities that I recommend doing on site in the same room, not virtually. There are many things great work. I mean, works great in the kind of online environment. But these specific type of things, I recommend that you really get somewhere, but basically in a nice environment, lock yourself up in a room. And this is what you do for a couple of hours, like really practically made time for it. Like the whole purpose of the team being here now is to talk about the future. That helps it a little bit because you get away from like daily stuff and firefighting and so on. And then you can, I mean, you can apply whatever method you like, if it's design thinking or if it's speakers or if it's a mural board or whatnot. But the sheer like concept of, okay, we're now here. We have a 2-day agenda. We're going to talk about all of the things that we need to solve. But one part of it is going to be focused on the future, like. So then it is on everybody's like understanding that, okay, it's not like we're down prioritizing everything else or we're not taking care of really important things we have to do here and now. It's more that we are doing both. So it's not that. It sounds like it's common sense, but it's you really have to force yourself to also like give the big picture to people so that everybody understands that, okay, this session is dedicated for things that we need to do later on or that mm-hmm. we need to prepare for, but it's more like mm-hmm. on the horizon. Yes, and just try to keep people there mentally.
So that's you're right. It's common sense, but that's the thing about common sense these days. It's not very common, and that's I think that's the problem that we've got is that we actually get so caught up in many things that we overcomplicate, overanalyze a lot of things. Great, that's the planning part. You got into a room, you planned things out, everybody's happy, everybody's energized. You leave the room. What happens then? How do you move from planning to that execution part? And again, maintaining that balance of doing the future stuff, but also maintaining looking after the day-to-day.
Well, I think everybody usually are tired after these things.
Depends how much coffee there was
maybe,
in the room.
Maybe a little bit energized, but also tired. I think it's about project management mindset, maybe. It's about prioritizing among all of these things that pop up. It's about like seeing what needs to happen. And I really like to try to connect this into like the reality of what we need to do. Like, what does this mean in practice? What do we need to do that we're not doing today? Are we stopping to do something? What will change in my daily work? Like, and I'm thinking of this like from an organizational point of view. So, okay, if we want to go there, what will this mean for all the teams? What will practically, very practically need to change? And then start to planning out how it can happen and what needs to happen. And if it's, it could differ. It's if it's around like policies or if it's around an area that we want to increase our capability in, or it could be that we need a new system for something. I mean, it could be so many different things, but try to break it down. I try, and this is both for a short-term and long-term strategy, I think. I try to break it down together with the team and everybody involved. What does this mean in practice? What do we need to do?
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very interesting point of you saying, okay, what does that mean from a practical point of view? What do you need to do with your teams? And I understand that obviously it's different areas that depending on what's going on, depending on the situation, depending on what you're focusing on, that need to adjust. Are there any areas that you most often need to adjust, whether it's a policy, whether it's a process? And are these major changes or more on kind of minor tweaks of how you work together as a team?
That's a tough question. I think there is a broad spectrum. I think most of the, I wouldn't say, in my experience, it's rarely radical changes because then you're basically, then you may be better off starting a new part of your company that's doing this new thing if it's like completely different. So I think that it's a lot about it's a lot about tweaking and pulling levers here and there and adjusting something here and doing something different there. So I would say that incremental smaller changes are probably more common because you're still like having an evolution of an existing business, right? Or an existing operation. So for the cases where it's like radically different, then maybe it's a different approach to make that happen. For the majority of the shifts or changes or improvements or then I would say that it's incremental changes, and sometimes they can be bigger, sometimes they can be smaller, but they're still in the realm of something that we kind of do today, but we might do it differently.
Can you give us an example of some of the changes that you had to do in the last, let's say, last six months that kind of follow that logic?
Well, I mean, sure. Establishing a new delivery location. It's not a new thing, but there is a need for something. And then it's like, okay, we need to have also a team in this part of the world or in this country, or we need to expand our offices into. So it's, again, it's like we have offices. It's not a new concept, but it's in a new location. And with that comes a bunch of, we might need to understand labor laws or regulations or how the talent market looks in this location. We already have processes for that and a lot of knowledge for other parts, but now we need to kind of build the same thing for this part. So it's, again, it's not new, but it's a little bit new. And we can build on a lot of the existing practices and knowledge and kind of incorporate this additional flavor into it.
And in terms of how your teams work together, any kind of changes, new practices that you've introduced recently?
Ooh, well, yeah. You're kind of putting me on the spot here because I have a hard time labeling what is new practice and what is an improved.
any tools or any major changes that you think you say, okay, we've done this because we're gearing up to a new product or we needed to adjust something, because in a way, what I'm trying to get at is maybe not the specific practice, but the expectation of actually what needs to happen. What I come across very often is the expectation that we need to change, we need to adjust. And for my clients, is that in a way that it's a relatively immediate thing that they need to do in the matter of days and weeks rather than months and quarters and years. Because the type of changes and transformations I work with, they usually take more time than somebody expects. And it's not always about a complete transformation because that takes years. But even small changes, small transformations based on, you know, small adjustments of practices, as you mentioned, that they still take time to, first of all, figure out what's going to work best and implementing, testing it and making sure that it embeds as it should do. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at from your experiences on, you mentioned getting a new delivery place, a new office, major-ish thing, but not a complicated thing, but something that's probably going to take time. But in terms of adjusting how a team works, a new tool that's being introduced, what's your kind of feeling in terms of when you walk out of these workshops and, oh my God, we've got work lined up for us for the next year to get this off the ground? Or is it more, you know, we'd like to kind of get this done within a quarter? Where does that
mean? It's more on the quarter basis, I would say, because, the world is changing very, very fast. We have to be able to adapt and change even faster. So I would say it's a creative ways of identifying that, okay, we need to do this thing a little bit different because of ABC. How do we do it in the best way? And then involving the people that are actually experts in the area and kind of crowdsourcing good ideas or identifying blockers or thinking of new ways of doing things or implementing a new tool or a new process or a new meeting forum that's needed or whatever it might be. I think the key is to be transparent about, okay, we need to change because ABC, we have some ideas of what we might need to do, but then involve a little bit more people to get kind of really that creative and commitment going in the organization that, okay, we need to change. Everybody understands why and can contribute to kind of making the best out of it.
And do you tend to make these decisions very much top down, or is it kind of a top down or a top decision, but then worked in through the organizations? Because each organization is different, and it's not that one's better than the other. But some organizations prefer to have just, like, you know, the top decides, and then we do have a discussion, or there's a top down. Classic top-down approach. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing, explaining it, and so on and so forth, kind of navigating that change.
I think it's a mix. It depends on the topic, of course, and it depends on kind of the speed. It would be so much easier if I could just design everything overall in life.
Yes, but, indeed. I know what you mean.
But that would be a great kind of recipe for backlash afterwards and implementation commitment and if it actually was a sane decision or not. So I'm not doing that. But discussion, anchoring, and getting involvement from the team takes more time. It takes more effort. So you need to also like find a balance because it cannot hinder you from doing changes, but you still kind of need to have that as a vital part. So I think that we have been trying to find a balance about being transparent. It's one of our core values. We believe that people are capable of understanding the situation, and we also want the engagement on how to solve things in the best way. So we share numbers. We talk about why we do things. I think the important thing for me is kind of not in the details, but more that the whole team has the same kind of direction on top of mind where we're going. So sometimes it's more about a mindset shift. And this is, I go back to what we talked about earlier. It's like growth is important, but sustainable growth is even more important right now. Like that's a little bit of a mental shift, and that can translate into people starting to think a little bit differently about costs or about clients or about how our contracts look like or whatever it might be. It kind of fosters, okay, how can we do this in a more sustainable way? And that's kind of the mind shift that I'm after. And then we can discuss the best.
The mindset shift thing is actually a very interesting thing because, you know, we're talking about it short-term and long-term planning. But if you look at the problem positioning or the polarity positioning, that's all over the place. One of the other most common ones that I see are profit versus purpose or profit versus people. And again, change the versus to an and you get a completely different approach. Because I'm often accused of saying that money is not important in organizations because I say put people first. And I'll stand by that aspect that people should be put first because if you put money first, your decisions will be completely different in both cases, right? But again, it's not one or the other because you can't have one without the other. You hardly in any situation can you have a company without people and the other way around. So it's about, again, finding that balance and finding that and accepting that it's a shift and seeing, you know, what are the upsides if we focus too much on purpose? What's the downside if we focus not enough on purpose and profit? And so, and kind of manipulating and going through that balance and trying to even it all out.
And I mean, in most cases, people are what generates the business. Like, you know, so you're not wrong in that. I think that there is a Swedish word called dumsnål. And that is something that I really want us as a company to avoid. And that's where you're being cheap in a stupid way. Like, you know, you're removing coffee in the offices or taking away educational competence development budgets or stuff like that. And it's so easy to kind of take off the things, but they're actually connected to like building strong teams, building loyalty, building collaboration and development, both for the company and for the individuals. So those are not the things that you should kind of take off first from the list, unless you're really, really, really in a bad situation where you have to. But that's like, yeah, so don't be stupid, cheap, but kind of, you know, care. I mean, that's how I try to look
at it. What's the Swedish word again?
Dum, snål. So dum is stupid, snål is cheap.
Don't be cheap in a stupid way. Is that what?
I love that.
What I was thinking of when you were saying, for me, the expression that I often use is like a company looking down and thinking, oh, I've got 2 feet. I'm going to shoot myself in the left one because why would I need both? And again, that's the same. If you cut a department, right? Many years, marketing used to be seen as this colorful crayon creative department, but what's the real value? So when the economy was tanking, that was the part of the department that was being cut. And then all of a sudden, you know, business is picking up, but you don't know how to actually position yourself. You know how to market yourself. What do? You're screwed, to put it bluntly. Similar thing that I'm seeing now happening with, not just with IT industry, but overall, recruiters and HR departments are being cut down. Partially, I understand that because obviously if you're not recruiting, then you don't need to have recruiters on your books. I get that. HR also needs to prove its value to the business. Agree with that. But then also, you can't you can't be cutting everybody out, because then all of a sudden, first of all, you are affecting how your company runs in terms of the collaboration element that we've been talking about. But also, sooner or later, you will need recruiters because the economy is going to pick up and you're going to be in a position where you quickly need to recruit somebody. And the people that you're going to be recruiting shouldn't be the recruiters. It's the people that you actually need to push your business forward. And that's what I mean by that. But that brings us on to a very, very interesting point, actually two of them. One, how do you find the things that you need to cut that are not stupid, that are affecting the how your team cooperates, how they gel together? Because there's a lot of instances and situations now that everything's being cut because it's being seen as a perk, that a benefit that doesn't really bring any value. But the thing is, you don't realize how much value it has until you actually remove it. So how can you do that before it gets into trouble?
That's the $10,000 question, right? I truly believe in listening to people. I think it's one of those things that also sounds like common sense, but it's sometimes people forget. So I mean, in my experience, I've been trying to always look at multiple different options for the same thing. Like if we have a problem and instantly a solution pops up, then I'm like not ready to take it at face value. Like I have to question myself, question the team, try to think about, okay, is this really the only thing that we can come up with as a solution for this challenge? Like, how about this or that? And then we work with pros and cons. And then we see that, okay, some of these downsides or upsides are actually connected to how things used to be in the past and people might not like it. Or some of these downsides or upsides might be connected to things we want to do in the future. And then it gives like a little bit of, gives you a little bit more of a, at least the feeling of a conscious choice that you're okay. You're choosing among these options. Maybe all of them are okay. Maybe all of them are equally bad. I don't know. It depends on the situation. But you're actually evaluating and you're going with one. And then I would say that the important thing is also being ready to change and to kind of backtrack sometimes or admit that this didn't work out as we thought or hoped. We have to go back or we have to do something else, maybe option two on the list or whatever. So I think that being open to scrutinizing yourself, I think that's really key, because you cannot be too afraid to try things or to make decisions, because then you become paralyzed and then you don't do anything. And then that's the thing. That's not good. So I think a quick, agile approach to try things and admit when things did not go as planned and do something else.
Would you extend, because the second part of this question I wanted to ask is, would you extend this to deciding, for example, which areas of the business need to be potentially downsized, and whether, for example, whether it's recruiters, whether it's marketing, sales, kind of basically how you reorganize the business to help you in a situation where you're running short on money, for example, but then still maintaining that future element? Because that's kind of what I'm trying to get at. I understand what you said just now, and that agile trying and quickly pivoting as needed will work quite nicely in terms of internally as you collaborate, you remove certain perks, certain benefits on a smaller scale. But if you have to make larger business decisions, would your answer be similar, or are there elements that you would add on top of what you said?
No, I think that it's a bit similar, but on a larger scale, meaning that for bigger choices that has to be made, or things that needs to be solved on a bigger scale that's not like impacting one individual or one team or one department and so on, I think the key is to kind of look at it holistically, because then you see also the consequences and the dependencies between different areas. And then we say, okay, I'm not necessarily a fan of like non-changing departmental budgets that's always the same size equal to another department. You know, it's like you have to be able to look at the big picture and say, okay, if we're going to need more money here, we need to take it from somewhere else there and then try to identify where does it hurt the least, or where is it mostly in line with things that we think that we will be stopped doing in the near future anyhow. So maybe we can speed that up. So try to look at the big picture and balance all of the parts together. I think that's the key to avoid kind of, again, like doing something here and then suddenly it impacted something else there that you didn't think about. So those dependencies are also important.
Indeed. It's about that larger picture, right? Sometimes you need to step back. And as you said, sometimes it's better to do that face-to-face rather than online. I often facilitate such discussions simply because it's good to have an external pair of eyes, right? It's just, you know, come in, help us out and tell us what we're missing. guide us through a process where we're not seeing something, because that's because we work in it day to day. We just need somebody from the outside and tell us actually, or ask certain questions that we would never think about asking. And it can be something as simple: why are you doing this in this way, and have you thought about doing it this way? It can be often as simple as that. I would love to zoom out a little bit from the topic we've been covering, and ask you a question more around the challenges that you face, you as a co-CEO of an organization, when it comes to business strategy, what you're trying to do as a business, what you're trying to achieve as a business, and aligning that with the ways you work, so that, you know, what your strategy is supported by how you collaborate as a team and the ways of working. What are some of the real day-to-day challenges? Because you said firefighting. What are the fires that you're fighting? Because I work usually a couple of levels above, and often we arrive at a point like what we've described here. It's fantastic. We can do that. It's going to take time. But actually, there's a whole bunch of things that are more day-to-day that we really need to focus on now. And I'm always curious, what are those things for you in this particular case?
Yes, I'm trying to think about my week to give you some concrete.
Depending on the week, it's something completely different. Yeah, okay.
It's different. I mean, it's everything from company admin to customer escalations to something happening in one of the offices or some team that has a challenge. So it's like, it's really hard to kind of say that it's one type of things that are the firefighting. I think it's like a constant making sure that nothing falls between the chairs and that we're on top of the things that we want to do, and then have a little bit of time to kind of tackle the things that come from the side. That's curveballs. That's like, oh, somebody now wants a new contract or on the client side and was not planned, not part of a process. Something just happens. You just have to deal with it. So I think that a lot of those things are, I say for me personally, is not necessarily the amount of them, but the different nature of them. It takes time to reset. It's like, okay, now it could be really from solving a really difficult thing or having to have a tough conversation or make a difficult decision to I have to fill out some form for a bank. Like the switch, the mental switch that's needed to put yourself in, like, okay, now I'm doing this and now I'm doing that, and that the nature of the things are so different, that takes energy to reset between the things. So that's that. If I would mention one challenge that I have, that would be it. The high and low, the big and small, the difficult and the practical, but everything still has to be done. You just have to
So what I'm hearing, so from your position as a CEO, it's a question of energy balancing and also time balancing to a certain extent, trying to do context switch that requires energy, but also having the time to be able to keep up with everything that's going on and support the team when they need it.
Yeah, and actually also like trying to avoid one of the pitfalls that I talked about earlier, which is that if we're talking about strategies and execution in particular, it's so easy to say nice words on a high level, right? It's really like fancy high level statements. It sounds good and so on, but the key is like really working through what it means in practice. And sometimes I think about this, like, I mean, I've been in big companies, many companies before, I'm not talking about Beetroot now, but it's so easy that every time it's like a new strategy is announced or a new reorg is announced, it's so fluffy and it's like, oh, we want to bring value to our customers. It's like, okay, didn't we want that before? Or like, what does it mean? That for me is not a strategy. And it's an easy pitfall to fall into, even for myself. So I have to remind myself of, okay, bringing more value to customers, that's not a strategy. That's like that's something else. It's a statement. But coming down to like finding that level between the operational work and those vision, mission statements, and the thing that we call strategy that's in between, that's like, okay, what is it that we want to do? And in our case, for example, we have one statement that I think is a little bit more of a strategy, a little bit less of fluff. And that is, if you say, for example, that we want to increase our knowledge in the domain of sustainability reporting tech, because then we can help our customers, because they will fall under the new corporate sustainability reporting directive. So then it's more, okay, it's a strategy. We want to increase our business in this area. We want to do something for our customers that we haven't done before. And then we can figure out the steps to do it. But just to say we want to be good at, you know, X, Y, Z, that is something that I struggle with. Not struggle with, but I kind of try to remind myself that, okay, we can't just say fancy words. We have to put something behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about being that practical element of how you're going to do it. There's nothing wrong, as you said, there's nothing wrong with those statements that you can use them. You can guide in principles, mission, values, whatever you want to call them. But again, what's behind them? What stands behind them? And the phrase I like to use, the how do you ground them in reality, okay?
Yeah.
Use that, great, because the sentences that you've mentioned, 9 times out of 10, they appear in my workshops. And again, it's like, okay, everybody feels nice and great that they've done something that gives them kind of the sense of, okay, we're doing something. But then that doesn't translate. You know, a few weeks after the workshop, we're thinking about what we need to do, because that practical element's not there. We need to focus on that even more. Ground is, okay, you want to do this? Fantastic. What does that mean? Tell me, how does that look during a normal day, during a normal week's work? And I think that's an important thing to focus on as well. We were talking about the past. We've been talking a little bit kind of very generically about the future. I'd like to narrow down the future a little bit to the next few months, the next 2-3 months. What is it that you've got coming up that you're working on with Beatrice that you're kind of really excited for it to see the light of day, or that you can't really wait for it to be completed or reach the next stage?
Well, I actually have one thing that's on top of mind, and it's a bit internal, but I choose to mention it anyway because it really connects to the people dimension you talked about. So after 2 years of COVID and then war, we're now finally having an on-site workshop for a large part of our team that haven't been able to meet each other for the past years. Some people have been working together for more than a year, never met live. I mean, and that is the case in many companies, but we're doing that thing where we're actually taking the time, taking the effort, taking the, you know, work that it means to organize such a thing to be able to meet each other live and discuss our strategies and discuss the things that we need to do and figure out smarter ways to do them than we had in the individual groups or sessions. So bringing people together and actually taking the time to do that, we're doing it in April, and I'm really, really looking forward to that.
That is fantastic to hear, because you're definitely working remotely is great. It's great advantages, but nothing's going to beat person to person, human face to face interaction. So I'm really glad that you get the opportunity, especially after everything's been that you've been through as a company within the IT industry. That's tough enough, and obviously with everything else going on with in Ukraine with your team and affecting the company as a whole as well. So I'm really glad that you get the opportunity to do that. And what a fantastic note to end on, I would say. Anna, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for the openness and sharing about the difficulties that you face, but also giving us a glimpse into how you work at Beatrice, how you approach things. And it's been very, very valuable to me. And the listeners, I'm sure, will appreciate that as well.
Thank you so much for having me.